are gonna walk all over you.
Welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Now, today, I'm very excited to welcome a businesswoman turned professional dominatrix onto Radio Gorgeous, the sexist station where you'll only hear the female voice. Jackie Donovan described herself as a Stepford wife-ish girlfriend who had worked hard and been a good girl all her life until she unleashed herself into a new and very successful career in the sex industry. She has written all about it in her new book, Instant Whips and Dream Toppings. Welcome, Jackie, to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Now, first question I have to ask you is, why did you become a dominatrix?
Well, I stumbled into the fetish scene by accident. I was having a casual relationship with a girl at the time. I was also a very senior manager in one of the world's largest IT companies. And we genuinely thought in our naivety that this was a club for people who like to wear slightly outrageous clothes like PVC, leather and uniforms. And so we tottered along on our 6-inch heels. And sure enough, over a couple of floors, that was exactly what was happening. It was a nightclub, but people were dressed very provocatively. And then we parted some black velvet curtains and couldn't believe our eyes, because beyond them there was a large naked guy tied up to a big wooden cross, and behind him an equally large lady in a huge black leather corset, her breasts spilling over the top, and she was whipping him senseless. And my friend Danielle and I just looked at each other, and basically it was wow. We were totally smitten by the whole scene. We couldn't believe what was happening. And as we looked around, we saw more and more people being whipped and teased and tormented. And from that moment on, I was just absolutely and utterly hooked.
So you loved it. You didn't go into it thinking, I'm just going to become a dominatrix. You actually, do you enjoy the work then?
Very much so. It's a career that I've totally and utterly chosen. So it is a strategic career move for me, because I left the IT company to become operations director of a PC company. And, and I was on a very nice salary, over £100,000 a year.
Wow.
And I was heading towards becoming a managing director. God. But in the back of my mind, I kept thinking, I love the fetish scene. I wonder if I could turn my hobby into a business. And so I chose it is a career, and I opened my own dungeon and haven't looked back since.
Wow. So what year was this then?
That was about the year 2000.
Okay, so I can work that out. It was 14 years ago.
Yes.
Did you resign from your business? Did you, you know, how did it kind of happen?
Well, I was in some ways quite fortunate. I was actually made redundant.
Great, so you got some money.
So I got some money, because prior to that, I had gone to see my bank manager to discuss the business plan that I'd written for the dungeon. So he looked somewhat bemused by the whole thing.
And this is in Southampton as well.
I'd moved to London by this stage.
Where were you in London? Where did you ask them?
I was in Holborn.
Okay.
And that was where I opened the dungeon.
Now that's a very good place, because you're in between the West End and the city, aren't
absolutely
you?
Yeah. Before I chose the area I was going to work in, I did write a very extensive business plan. So I used all the skills that I got from my IT career and investigated exactly what other dominatrices were doing across London, where they were, what they offered, how much they charged. And based on that, I decided to open my own premises in Holborn on the basis that there were going to be a lot of city gents close by, a lot of lawyers, judges, high-profile people, and it certainly worked.
And did you live there, or was it just your dungeon?
No, I had it very separate. So I had a dungeon environment, and then I had my own apartment
not far away. Okay. And did you have to get kind of, I mean, was it underground, or was it, you know, on the normal, you know, was it on first, second, third floor?
It was a beautiful Mews apartment in a tiny little Mews Street just off the Gray's Inn Road. Mm. And so to all intents and purposes, it just looked like domestic premises. And that was one of the things that the clients who came to see me really liked about it, because it was very discreet. It's very nicely cobbled little road, and you just wouldn't imagine that when you get behind the closed doors, inside is a dungeon.
Now, is it legal to do it?
It's a very grey area. That was something else that I investigated when I was writing the business plan. And there are certainly some court cases that make you question, are you allowed to do it or not? But I went ahead anyway. And certainly in my experience, when I needed to call the police on a number of occasions, not because anybody was doing anything violent to me, but I was harassed by a girl, I was harassed by a client.
They were kind of stalking you.
They were stalking me by phone and email and text message. Mm. The girl had fallen madly in love with me. And the guy was trying to accuse me of being the person that outed Max Mosley, who was in the press round about that time in the case against the News of the World. Mm. At that stage, I didn't even know who Max Mosley was. But I did the thing that the client never thought I would do. I picked up the phone, dialed 999. I actually lived opposite Holborn Police Station, and they were absolutely and utterly brilliant. They didn't bat an eyelid. They very much took my side. And as a result of their phone call to the guy in question, I never heard from him again.
So. Fantastic. Can you explain what a dominatrix does?
It really covers a multitude of different areas, and each dominatrix will decide what sort of service she herself wants to offer. So it will go from, say, somebody working in a very perhaps domestic environment that perhaps just does a little bit of tie and tease, a bit of spanking, perhaps a bit of whipping, all the way through to people who will get involved in what for me is the very hard and dangerous side of the industry, where perhaps you're asphyxiating people, branding them, tattooing them. That's the sort of side that I decided I didn't want to go into.
No, because that's literally hurting somebody.
For me, it's going beyond just dishing out pain. It's potentially marking them for life.
Yeah.
And in the case of something like asphyxiation, there's a very fine line between life and death. And I don't know where that line is.
Exactly.
And I didn't want to find out the hard way.
And there are a few celebrities it's obviously happened to, and people.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So I position myself probably somewhere between the two.
Yeah, kind of mid-market.
Yes. So I did have a lot of clients that came to see me because they did just want to be teased in a sort of erotic but kind of threatening sort of way. There were others who definitely did want pain, whether that was with me using clamps on their nipples or sometimes kicking them, whipping them, caning them.
Yeah.
And then there are the clients that I talk about in my autobiography. And I focused on the really unique fantasy role play sessions because they are absolutely and utterly bizarre. They're not the sort of thing that people have written about in other dominatrix autobiographies, and certainly not the sort of thing that 50 Shades of Grey covered. So it's a totally different view of the BDSM world.
Now, I want to ask, because I'm interested in it from the point of view that you're a dominatrix. What if someone came, though, and said that they wanted to, you know, whip or slap your bottom? Would you allow that?
No, I don't allow that. But I did used to employ what I call slave girls who provided that sort of service. By slave girls, I do not mean that they were trafficked into it or doing it against their will. They were paid very handsomely to provide that sort of service. And they were always girls who genuinely enjoyed having their bums spanked or being lightly whipped, etc. But I was always present at those sessions to ensure that the client didn't cross to the wrong side of the line and give them more pain than they were prepared to take. They created a very fun session because they always played up. And the sessions where the client was laughing and the girl was laughing and they would tease each other, and then I could perhaps punish both of them or, you know, tell the client off even if you were playing master. They were really, really enjoyable sessions.
Is that the thing, that you are master then?
I'm mistress.
Mistress.
Yes.
What do you wear?
I usually wear a black PVC catsuit and thigh-length boots. So I like the fact that it immediately differentiates me from the client in that I am dressed almost head to toe, whereas they are going to be totally naked.
I was going to say, do you ever get your clothes off?
No, I don't. I keep my clothes on.
And so you don't have intercourse then?
No, I don't have intercourse with them.
Okay, but you can do anything else to them?
I can do anything else. It's absolutely my choice. That's the beauty of the job, that because I'm in control of the session, I can go as far as I want or not go very far at all.
Yeah, yeah.
The decision is absolutely and utterly down to me.
Fantastic. So it literally is a very good model for your own business.
Very much so. And it's also the only business I know where the ruder you are to your clients, the more likely they are to come back, because they love that. They love being told off. So if you're having a bad day, you can shout at them, take it out on them, rant and rave a little bit. And they tend to go, oh, mistress, mistress, I love you, mistress, I adore you, mistress. And you know they will make another appointment.
And are there some people that just want to, like, you know, sit in the corner or do the cleaning, you know, really simple things?
I did have one client, and he's described in the book, and he really did surprise me, because what he wanted to do was to wear a plastic PVC pinny. He also wanted me and the slave girl to wear plastic PVC pinnies. That was the one occasion I did actually take my clothes off. Mm-hmm. But I was covered by a rather ridiculous apron, yeah. One of those that has a pair of breasts on it,
sort
of
a
titty pinny.
Yeah.
He was wearing a Paddington Bear version, and he had my slave girl wear one with Dennis the Menace on it. And he wanted to dust my dungeon with a feather duster, and he did my ironing because he was asking for other household tasks to do, and that was literally all he wanted to do. He got very turned on by it, and usually it's fair to say that a client would like to have a happy ending at the end of the session.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But in his particular case, my flabber was gasted because he genuinely didn't want anything else out of it but to get the excitement of cleaning a dominatrix's dungeon,
yeah,
while wearing a plastic apron.
Fabulous. So handy.
It's,
I want him
it's
to come
brilliant.
Once a
week.
You keep saying you got something for me, something you call love, but confess.
Follow us on Twitter, radio_gorgeous. Lots of love, darlings. Mwah. Would you give them a blowjob?
No, definitely
okay.
not.
Ah.
But I would potentially put my hand on their penis.
Yeah.
But again, that was absolutely down to me as to whether I wanted to get my hands involved that day,
wow,
or whether I would tell them to do it themselves.
God, it's just perfect. Sorry, I can't say any downside.
No, I mean, for me, it was exactly what I wanted from a job. All the choices were mine.
Yeah.
If a client wanted to maybe try and verbally complain, you can just tell him off because that's your job, and you could slap him or whatever it was that was his favourite form of punishment, and the decisions were all absolutely down to me.
Are you in real life a control freak?
I think many people would say that I am. I have two younger brothers, so that probably from an early age I've learned to fight my own corner.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was working in IT for over 16 years, I was a manager for most of that time. So I was very much used to bossing people around. And similarly, when I was an operations director with a large team of people working for me. So it's absolutely natural thing for me to do. So I really didn't have to think about what am I going to do and how am I going to throw myself into this role.
Yeah.
It was one of the few jobs that I've literally fallen into and just sail through it without having to question what I'm doing and how.
You said you have a girlfriend. Do you like men as well? Are you bisexual?
I'm bisexual, but that only started when I reached the ripe old age of 40. It really was life begins at 40 for me, because prior to that, I had had a particularly tedious sex life. And
what, with man or a woman?
Always with men.
Yeah.
I didn't even consider women from a sexual point of view.
Fulfilling sex life? Did you have orgasms? Did you?
I had orgasms if I did it myself, but otherwise, no, not particularly exciting with the guys that I was with.
Okay.
And then I met a married man and started to have an affair with him.
And that was when you were still working in the Nordic?
That was when I was still working in IT.
Uh-huh.
And at that stage, I was very much a frumpy housewife. I used to bite my fingernails. They were always bitten to the quick. I had long, straggly grey hair. I never wore makeup or jewellery. My clothes were neck to ankle, frumpy. And he saw something in me that I didn't see myself. He encouraged me to make more of myself. And so I stopped biting my nails for the first time in nearly 40 years. And they just grew and grew like Topsy. Eventually, they were about 3 inches long at their peak. I started wearing makeup, jewellery, sexy clothes. I started to enjoy my sexuality. And he suggested that I look at women more closely. And how literally I took that comment. I suddenly discovered there was another species out there and I wanted to try them all. I totally enjoyed it. I see it as very different to to being with
What's the difference?
A man.
Tell us.
I think it was certainly when I think of the very first girl that I had sex with, she just felt so soft and squishy. And sexually, she was giving me things that I hadn't experienced with a man because the sex seemed to be a lot more slow, gentle to begin with.
So very much more tender type
activity. And she instinctively seemed to know what to do with me, probably because she had the same parts herself. And equally well, I seemed to know instinctively what to do with her. So I had lots of casual relationships with women.
And still do.
It was in Southampton, and when I moved to London, and I now live in Gran Canaria, and I would still see women over there when the opportunity comes along. Having said all that, I've never had a totally serious and committed relationship with a woman.
So you've never totally fallen in love with
a woman? I've never totally fallen in love with a woman, whereas I have fallen in love with a number of men over the years.
So
very nice plaything. Very nice.
And as long as you make that clear
absolutely
at the beginning, you know,
yes,
that you're not going to commit.
I think that is what particularly works for me with bisexual women rather than perhaps with lesbians, because the bisexual women have often got a boyfriend or husband, and so they are just looking for something casual, whereas often the lesbians that I met were looking to fall in love and stay at home.
So yes,
I do make it very clear when I meet someone that I'm genuinely not going to fall in love with you. Perhaps one day I will say never.
Ooh.
My lesbian friends say it's because I haven't met the right woman yet.
So who knows?
So
tell us about the dungeon. What do you have in there?
Well, first of all, I bought yards and yards and yards and yards of black material because inside it just looked like a normal apartment. And so I wanted it to look kind of more dark and threatening as soon as a client walked in the door. And so I attached material literally on every single wall and the ceiling. Every workspace was covered.
So quite dark and womb-like then.
Yes, very much so. And then I was going to the London Fetish Fair once a month on a Sunday.
Love it.
It's a very nice thing to do after you've been to church or something, to pop into a fetish environment. And there I found a guy who made custom-built furniture. And so he came to my apartment because I wasn't even allowed to put a panel pin in the walls. So I knew I couldn't attach major furniture to the walls. And he measured it all up and he created an amazing black wooden frame in the shape of a letter A. So you would tie the client's feet with rope at the bottom of the A. Mm-hmm. And then there was a pulley system at the top that had handcuffs attached. So you'd handcuff the client's hands, pull them above their head, and then basically they can hardly move. And so then I could tease and torment to my heart's content.
Perfect. With what sort of paddles, whips, brushes?
All sorts of things. Most of the tools of the trade came from the fetish fair, but I also found you could use household items like paintbrushes and the sort of thing that you used to stipple a ceiling when you used Artex in those days. You could use a cat brush, which is quite spiky. So it was all sorts of imaginative
things. When you met the person, did you have like a good chat with them about what they wanted? Was that the thing?
Yes, I always did because usually when the client arrives, they're quite nervous.
Yeah.
And it's important for me that I understand where their boundaries lie, because if you cross the boundaries to the wrong side of the line, they could potentially do you for grievous bodily harm. So I always insisted that we had a chat about their likes and dislikes. To begin with, when they arrive, I always sit them down and just ask them a little bit about, you know, where have you come from, and what do you do for a living, just to make just small talk to make them feel that this lady is okay. And so they know that by the time you switch into role, they do trust you, because that's the bit that is absolutely paramount in a session, that the client does need to trust that you're not going to do something absolutely crazy to them that that is outside their likes and dislikes.
You were near the city, you're near the West End. Who mostly were your clients then?
It could be absolutely anybody, from 18-year-old students to 83-year-old pensioner, even an 8-month pregnant lady. So you really don't know, you know, wherever you're listening to this radio broadcast, if you happen to be in a room full of people, it could be the person beside you. It could be absolutely anybody.
How did they hear about you? How did you advertise?
I had a website designed. I advertised a little bit in some of the fetish magazines as well, but it was predominantly through my website that people came across
me. What was the name, so that people could find it? Did it have Dominatrix in it?
The original one was called dominatrixlondon.com, but the one that is still running is mistresskimberly.co.uk.
Okay.
So when I come back to London, I do still get some business from that website, but then I usually do just work in a domestic environment rather than being able to do it in a dungeon.
Exactly. Is it mostly public school? Do they have a, you know, penchant for it more?
There are a lot of public school boys that come that do want to be whipped and caned, but it's by no means predominantly them. It can be anybody in absolutely any walk of life. They're not necessarily people with a lot of money. Sometimes people will save and save and save for months and months to be able to do it.
Well, don't you give them an extra good time?
I give them all a good time. So you really just don't know. And because people want different things from the session, then it really depends what's going on in their head. What is their fantasy? A lot of my high-powered, influential businessmen very much see me as their therapist, because they say that they spend all their time making multi-billion-dollar decisions, bossing around teams of sometimes, you know, thousands of employees. And so when they come to see me, they feel as if they can leave their brain by my front door and relax.
They
and
can just relinquish all responsibility
and control and just do what they're told. And it's amazing the number of men that have told me that, which fascinated me, because I never saw it as being relaxing and therapeutic, but it seems that it is.
Fabulous. Now, what would they generally, the high-powered ones, want?
Again, it can cover all sorts
Tell
of different
some
things.
Weird things, come on. Or funny things, whatever.
Well, there was a very well-known MP came to see me, and he wanted to have a cream cake throwing session. And he did want to be able to retaliate. So he came armed with a couple of carrier bags with a variety of different sorts of cakes and erotic eclairs and cheesecake, chocolate gâteau. And we basically threw the cakes at each other, and he got a huge turn on from that particular session. It was very, very funny to see. Made an awful mess, but he did help clear it up. So, and it's very different to see the persona that he was in my dungeon compared to the persona that he used to be in front of the television cameras, when you used to see him being interviewed you know, on TV about something political.
Boring.
Yeah.
Again, I suppose it's all sorts of different women want to be dominated.
All sorts of different women. A lot more men come to see me than women. Okay. But when it came to women, again, they could be any age. But the one that did take me most by surprise, and I genuinely thought was a wind-up when she called, was the lady who was 8 months pregnant. And she wanted to be spanked and teased. And she also wanted to kind of role play a sort of doctors and nurses type session. I used some electrical equipment on her. It was a very, very funny session. I thought she was giving birth partway through and her waters had broken. She was just having a rather good orgasm. So, but she said that she liked the power that it gave her to put £150 in my hand and ask to have something specific done to her and to know that I would do it. As many of the situations I was in, it puts a big question mark in my head over who is actually in control of these sessions. Because really, as far as I can see, it's the submissive that is dictating the do's and don'ts. They set out their boundaries. And then I, as the mistress, put together a session, but very much working within the parameters that they've defined. So for me, it often felt a little bit like they were controlling me. They'd handed over that power to me. It does make me question.
Now, Jackie, being someone who likes being controlled, that was the moments you didn't enjoy so much.
Well, it was, I think the control comes from knowing that you can get them to do things. And if you say jump, they will jump. And you can push the client's boundaries a little. But yes, it does fundamentally make me question. You know, I understand that I'm not totally and utterly in control. I can't do something to a client that he or she doesn't want. Or rather, if I do, then I know they won't come back.
So it really is about, it's a client-based relationship.
Very much so. I felt at times that it was just an extension of my previous successful IT career.
Wow.
Because customer satisfaction, to me, is absolutely and utterly paramount. Mm. You want a customer to come back in the same way that any other business does. It's much easier for me if I get repeat business rather than having to go out and look for new business. So all my previous customer-facing skills were being used, albeit in a very different way, and with me wearing a black PVC catsuit and thigh-length boots.
It's fabulous, Jackie. Can you read, kind of set a little, you know, five-minute kind of bit from your book?
These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you.
RadioGorgeous.com. So Instant Whips and Dreams Toppings can be bought as an ebook, but it can also be bought as a book, yes?
Absolutely. It's available on Amazon in both formats.
Yeah. So, and your website. Yeah.
And you can find details on my website, which is instantwhipsanddreamtoppings.com. And there's an excerpt from the book on there as well. And many Amazon reviews, which have been terrific. So that's been great to see.
Fabulous. Now let's hear a bit. The thing that you say about this book is that this is reality.
It's absolutely real. The subtitle for my book, the byline, is A True Life Dom Rom-Com. So it's very, very different.
Yeah, yeah. It's beautiful. Red cover with black writing, yeah. And you're even wearing a T-shirt.
Me on the front.
You on the front, yeah.
The first chapter is called Cream Teas and HP Sauce. It's the satisfying squelch of the chocolate gâteau as I smear it over the jowly face of the right dishonourable gentleman in front of me that finally convinces me that not becoming managing director of one of the UK's largest security companies was, indeed, the right decision. To be or not to be a captain of industry? That was the question. Accept the position and a career in security, or politely turn it down and face a possible future of insecurity as a result? If I'd not arrived at that particular fork in the road 12 months ago, then maybe I wouldn't be in the sticky situation in which I currently find myself, in a darkened room with a large silver spoon in my hand that I'm using to scoop up a hefty blob of cream. Whipped cream. Now then, I smack my lips and smile. Who wants some of this? As if I needed to ask. He's clearly enjoying having his cake and eating it too. My jaw had dropped when I'd opened the door, recognising him instantly. It was... well, obviously, I can't tell you. This particular private session with an MP and a constituent will forever demand I keep my own cake hole firmly closed. Let's just say, despite what you might be thinking, he hasn't been elected to serve Bakewell or Chelsea or Eccles. He's using our brief ceasefire as an opportunity to taste some of the luxury chocolate gâteau smeared all down one side of his podgy face. He scrapes off some remnants from his flabby, wobbly arms and from his bloated stomach. Or stomachs. He must weigh 25 stones at least. Then he starts to lick the cream and chocolatey crumbs from each of his chubby fingers. This guy should be seriously worried about his cholesterol levels, I think, as I start towards him, the weapon of body mass destruction clutched in my hand. He counterattacks my cream offensive by merely standing there, caked in sponge, and shouts, "I mean it now. I'm really going to get you this time." and glad he's enjoying himself, even if I'm finding the experience too much to swallow. Whether it's nobler to suffer the slung pastries or to take arms against a sea of truffles, I'm uncertain. All I know is, for this session, I'm earning an outrageous fortune. Suddenly, naked apart from a pair of fetching knee-high navy socks and chocolate-streaked boxer shorts, he leaps towards me, huffing and puffing confectionery-based obscenities. How different he looks compared to the image he normally chooses to present to the house or in front of the TV cameras, the carefully constructed image that the public think they know well. "You haven't won this battle yet," he snarls menacingly, as he stops to pick a glacé cherry out from between his buttocks and flick it onto my black tiled floor. "I'm going to make you eat that later," I bark, but then try to duck as some airborne jelly, strawberry, suddenly comes flying towards me. Too late, it catches me full in the face and lodges in my hair, the rest of it slopping against the wall behind me. Three things quickly flash through my mind. Firstly, I'm pleasantly surprised to discover it's actually raspberry, my favourite flavour. Secondly, as my hair stands on end and stays there, I wonder if L'Oreal are aware of the potential benefits of using jelly or other sugary desserts in their hairspray products. Our new hair care range, Blancmange and Custard, because you're worth it. Thirdly, I'm getting tired. We've been acting out this bizarre bun fight for nearly 2 hours, and it's time to come to the end of this particular course. Besides, I have my own battles with food to contend with, and to be fighting with someone who thinks it's fun has become uncomfortable, even for me. As we fool around with filthy fairy cakes and erotic eclairs, I notice his fairly insubstantial cock raising a point of order. No doubt wanting to join in the fun, I briefly wonder whether I should grab some donuts to see how many this member of the house could cheerfully support. My guess is less than half a baker's dozen. However, this motion is dismissed when I spy a lemon cheesecake on the bed, untouched by our whipped cream wars. I strike my most seductive pose. No mean feat with my blonde, usually luscious hair now full of jelly, and my black PVC catsuit covered in cream. I grab a fistful of the cheesecake. He's visibly salivating as I slowly edge towards him. "Are you going to let me eat that?" he begs, quivering, dropping to his knees. "Don't speak unless I say so," I command firmly, and tower over him, proud, standing tall, with jam on my face. I lean forward and grab his cock with my cheesecake-filled hand. The pale lemon mixture covers his rampant rolling pin as I proceed to slowly massage his erection. Some of the biscuit base crumbles. "Such a waste of a good cake," I sigh inwardly, though I do feel a slight twinge down there, too. Maybe I'm secretly hungry for some creamy clit cake action as well. It's something I've never tried before. Sweet dreams of Swiss roll fun dissolve as I realise my desires are turning towards myself rather than this sugar-coated MP with a shoo fetish kneeling before me. So, like a good mistress, I focus on nothing but his throbbing cock. I pull and tug harder and harder, the lemon and now gooey mixture acting as a mildly citric lubricant. "Oh, that's absolute bliss, you bitch," he exhales loudly and slowly. I can feel him swollen and pumping in my sticky fingers. "Remember who I am, slave. Don't overstep the mark, or I send you out of here without even an orgasm or a shower. Try getting a cab with a chocolate eclair sticking out of your backside," I threaten. His body goes limp. His cock does not.
Yay! Isn't that brilliant, Radio Gorgeous listeners?
You do actually find out who that particular client is if you read all the way through it.
Fantastic. So lovely to meet you today, and thank you so much for coming on Radio Gorgeous.
It's been terrific. Thank you very much for having me here.
It's a pleasure.
Radio Gorgeous, we are your new best friend.
You keep saying you got something for me, something you call love, but confess you've been a messin' where you shouldn't have been a messin', and now someone else is getting all your best. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you. You keep lying when you ought to be truthing. And you keep losing when you ought to not bet. You keep saying when you ought to be a-changing. Now what's right is right, but you ain't been right yet. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you. You keep playing where you shouldn't be playing. And you keep thinking that you'll never get burned. Ha! I just found me a brand new box of matches, yeah. And what he knows you ain't had time to learn. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you. Are you ready, boots? Start walking.
If you'd like to contact us, please email us on info@radiogorgeous.com or like us on Facebook or become part of our community. Just sign up your name on our website and we'll send an e-letter to you a few times a month.